are listening to Wells Tech, episode 586, recorded on January 30th, 2019, minus 23. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. We're also joined by semi-regular classroom technology correspondent Jason Schmidt as we continue our review of the book Faithfully Connected and focus on digital literacy, consumption, evaluation, and creation. Lots of great discussion around how to make sure our kids understand how to use technology, how to use content online, and how to be God-pleasing in the process. We have some great picks of the week from Jason, Sally, and myself. We talk a little bit more about some digital literacy resources, a great video of the week, and some great feedback. Stay tuned for all that and more coming up. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 586 for January 30th, 2019. My lips quite aren't working today. My car's thermometer said negative 23 as I was driving into work today. Frigid Wisconsin. I'm thinking it's not quite negative 23 down there in Louisiana. Sally Draper's joining us. What's the weather report from Louisiana, Sally?
Well, we get to get our mail today, for one thing. I heard the mail being delivered up
there.
That's
right. Apparently, that good old phrase does not apply when it's negative 23.
Thankfully, right? For our mailmen, that's
for
a good
sure.
thing.
Yeah, it's not that important. I don't get that much mail anymore.
Down here, we're headed to 50 today and 70 by Sunday, so a little bit warmer than you guys.
Still sweater weather, though, for you thin-blooded folks.
Yeah, that's okay with me.
And we're also joined by Jason, who's probably somewhere in between Wisconsin and Louisiana, down there in Nebraska, Omaha, or the Omaha area. Hey, Jason, thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, excited to be on board with you guys. This is always a great time of month for me.
Good school in session today, full swing?
Nope, no school. We're a little bit less hardy than most postal workers, so we're calling it quits today. Seems like we like to have our excuses for not having school, which is totally okay.
It's a win-win. I think teachers enjoy it probably just as much as the kids, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Well, and it's great for me because I still report, but I can get a ton of stuff done with nobody around.
Right. Totally quiet. Right. Beautiful. Well, thanks for joining us. Jason is one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents. He joins us every other month during the school year to talk about education and educational technology. And when they are on this year, we've been going through a book called Faithfully Connected, Integrating Biblical Principles in a Digital World. And it's a book put out by Concordia Publishing House, recommended by Rachel. And we are on chapter 4, entitled Digital Literacy. I found it interesting in the first couple paragraphs, it says, in looking through all the 9 traits of digital citizenship, which is kind of how the book is organized, the trait of digital literacy provides the foundational support to make sense of the other 8 traits. Thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, we've hit chapter 4, now we're hitting the foundation. Makes you wonder, you know, why it wasn't hitting leadoff in the book here. But I think that's true if we truly understand what digital literacy is. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly it. I had the same thought, Martin. Just if this is such a foundational thing, why didn't we start there? But it's a really interesting concept, and the way that it's explained in the book really makes a lot of sense to me. And I can see how this is just a very useful framework.
You really need to get this part right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right.
It says digital literacy requires continually growing in our knowledge and understanding of the constantly changing nature of online and digital spaces. And I bet that's kind of scary for some in the educational space, because they kind of have to stay on top of this to be able to be digitally literate themselves, but also to make sure their kids are.
Well, and I think, you know, the whole concept of digital literacy is what makes it possible for you to be on top of this stuff. You know, the definition in the book, they're talking about how that's it's basically how we take information in, how we process it, and then how we use it to make something new. And, you know, that really makes a lot of a sense. That makes a lot of sense to me in the way that I think about things. You know, people keep asking me, they're always asking me, well, how do you know all this stuff? How do you all know all this stuff? And I said, well, I'm a huge consumer mm-hmm. of information.
Right. You're a user.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think that this is definitely one of those foundational skills that, that we need to have, and that our students and really everybody needs to have in the society that we live in. So they can just make sense of all of the information that's coming at them.
Yeah. One of the quotes I pulled from the book actually addressed kind of that concept of learning how to learn new literacies. And it said, it's more important than learning a specific literacy of reading and writing. A digital literate person must focus on the learning process and learning purpose to be successful. Zach Chase and Diana Laufenberg boil these processes and purposes down to three distinct areas: consumption, evaluation, and creation. And so the rest of the chapter kind of goes on those three paths. Exactly like Jason said, you got to be able to find it, to use it, to evaluate whether things are good or bad. That's that discerning heart we hope to pass on to the next generation. And then being able to create with it is huge. That really takes your knowledge to the next level.
So let's talk about consumption. That's the first of the three that they talk about. That doesn't sound very hard just at first look. Why is this one of the three legs of the stool here? What's so important about this? Can't we just consume things?
Sure. So, the whole consumption aspect is just the idea that there's information out there and we know where to find it, and then we can take that information in. So, you know, reading things on blogs or wikis or things like that, or Facebook is a huge consumption engine, you know, or just listening to podcasts like this, you know, that you can find pretty much any information that you want. I think the example was given like, you know, if you get into an argument with a friend about a trivia question, what's the first step you do? Well, you know, we're going to go to Google. Or, you know, we don't even have to do that in our house anymore. We have an argument about a little piece of trivia or something like that. We just ask our smart speaker, right? And it just gives us the answer right away. So, that ability to find that just in time information and consume that, is really the kind of the foundation of mm-hmm. digital literacy.
And I would think this used to be easier when there wasn't so much of the internet, you know, where you had a search engine like, I'm going to date myself, but Alta Vista, or Yahoo, where they basically curated search content. Now with things like Google and Bing and whatever, the amount of information, the number of search results that you get back is so wide and vast and broad that it can probably be a challenge to many adults or kids to find what you're looking for.
Yeah, one thing that I read in this section, and I think it was repeated multiple times in the chapter, actually, was that you can't assume that kids know it, because, mm-hmm. You know, we kind of look at them as the digital generation and that they know all that there is to know, but they need lessons in good search skills and, you know, looking at different sources and things like that. It explained a couple of times in the book even the concept of domain extensions, like what is a .edu versus a mm-hmm. .org versus a .com and .gov, all of those different things that maybe you have different levels of trust.
Or .pizza or you know, sure. .whatever, right?
Exactly. So some of those skills really do need to be taught rather than it's just assumed that children or adults even understand all that stuff that Google's spitting back at them.
As I think about this, and I'll let you chime in here, Jason, too, these digital assistants are almost contrary to that, where you're asking them a specific question and they give you one answer, as if that is the definitive source of truth. And that's a little bit scary to me. So you're asking Siri or you're asking Google or whoever, and they're giving you, you know, one verbal answer, which may not be correct or may not be the particular answer that you need at that time.
Yeah, you know, and that's exactly it. We do need to be cognizant of the fact that whatever response those devices give, or however, you're getting somebody else's perspective.
It's their version of the truth.
That's exactly right. And you know, for a lot of things, it's actually pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. But you know, as soon as you start getting into areas where there may be a little bit more gray area or a little bit more opinion, you know, that becomes a little bit more difficult. You know, they're really good at specific fact retrieval. You know, I can ask, you know, what's Chuck Norris's birthday, and it'll definitely tell me that, you know, exactly. But you know, if I ask more of an interpretive question, that may get into a little bit more difficult, and that's where the second part of it comes in, right? You know, when we're talking about evaluating the information that we receive and the results that we're looking at when we, for example, when we do an internet search or something like that.
Definitely. There were two terms that came out in that evaluation section, one of which I was familiar with and one that I wasn't. The one that I knew about was something called fake news, and I think we've all experienced that. I know what came to mind for me is people posting things on Facebook, you know, Facebook is going to make all your posts public, yada, 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 whatever the latest meme is. And you can, like, do a quick search and either validate or dispel, you know, a lot of the fake news that gets shared over and over and over again. And interestingly, the book likened that to an Eighth Commandment issue, that we're spreading lies that may hurt other people's reputation if we spread that fake news. So that was that was one thing in evaluation that struck a chord with me. The other was something they called post-truth. Facts are less influential in shaping public opinion than emotion and beliefs. So I think there's perception is reality is what came to mind there in that. And so as you're teaching and experiencing this method of evaluating all this digital content, you need to keep those two things in mind and be aware.
The outcry of the masses is so loud and so passionate that they must be right. There must be truth in here. And then the facts or a more discerning approach are lost in that process. Yeah. There was an interesting quote in the book in this chapter. Children and young people, and I guess I would say adults, need to be reminded to pause before they share, retweet, or repost any information of which they do not know the origin. And, boy, you see this every day. You spend 5 minutes on Twitter, and you definitely see that there is it's so easy for something to become viral, facts or no facts.
Right. Yeah. It's you know, Twitter just makes it so easy, or Facebook too. It's just so easy to see something, and you know, a lot of those clickbait sites and things like that. You know, it looks like, hey, you know, this looks like it could be legitimate, but you know, that whole idea of really taking a close look and making sure that you have the whole story. That's the other part of it too, because you know, it's not just a rush to judgment
or a piece of it or first reaction, right?
Yes, exactly. You know, if we don't have the whole story, then there's, you know, it's really, really easy for us to kind of jump to conclusions, and you know, it might look reputable, but really, you know, and that puts a lot of burden on us as a society, and for sure us as Christians, to really take a close look at those things that we're sharing, that information that we're spreading, and you know, and definitely keeping it in mind, you know, as far as the Eighth Commandment is concerned, and making sure we're doing that to build other people up and not tear others down.
Right. And so tempting, right? The devil works, has a huge playground here. There was a nice chart in this segment of evaluation called Recognizing False Content Online, the New 5 W's. What kind of false content should I watch for? Why is it being spread around? Who is spreading it? When did it start spreading? And where else can I find out if someone or if something is real or fake? Just kind of good tenets for somebody to think through. And I think all of us are want to kind of jump to and jump in versus, you know, a more thoughtful approach. And this kind of reminds us that, hey, we ought to be, you know, more evaluative in kind of what we see online, and probably should have been that way, even whether it's in print or, you know, paper print or hearsay or whatever. It's just the same biblical principles apply here, too.
That's what I was thinking, Martin, and I think a quote in the book kind of ties that up nicely. Stop and interpret what the world presents as truth by filtering it through the one truth found in the Bible and God's Word.
Right, right. Yep. Lutheran educators have a huge advantage here, right? Because they can go to that truth and put this right alongside. And what opportunities for learning and shaping those young faiths and minds as they go online as Christians. So, should we move on to the last kind of major segment here called Creation? What's that all about?
I like this section a lot. It reminded me of all the different things I've had to teach over the years. And, you know, I've only been in a classroom setting for 1 year. My very first year out of college, I taught algebra and geometry. And besides that, I've been teaching adults and doing online teaching over the years. And every time, no matter what the subject, if it's a geometry proof or it's how to build your church website, whatever it is, in order to do it, in order to teach it, I need to know it better than the student. I need to know its ins and outs. I need to have experienced it myself. And the same is true with digital content. If you know how to create content, just like Jason was saying at the beginning, you know, people are just amazed at, you know, that you can create and do all those things. Well, it's because I've taken the time and I've sweated through the process and I've understood the bells and whistles, and then being able to create it myself is just proof that I have this better understanding of the digital content.
Mm-hmm. Jason, what kind of creation tools do you see going around in your classrooms there?
Well, we actually see a lot of Seesaw. I get an email from our sales rep actually probably about once a week saying, hey, you know, people in your school district have created 68,000 artifacts. Mm-hmm. You want to pay for Seesaw? And my response is always, well, no, the free version is just awesome. So
you've made it too good, right?
That's it. Well, and I'm afraid to say that too much because, you know, I don't want them to take it away.
Right? So what is Seesaw?
Seesaw is basically a web-based or app-based platform where students can create artifacts and add them to a digital portfolio. So they can snap a picture and create narration over the top of it, or demonstrate a skill. They can draw, if you've got a touch screen or something like that, they can draw a picture and it records kind of a screencast as they're going. And it just makes sharing super easy. And you know, we use it very well, all the way down to kindergarten, all the way up through high school. AP French kids are using Seesaw to build a digital portfolio of their work in there. So really a versatile platform, definitely worth taking a look at for anybody who's interested in student creation and then also the easy communication and sharing.
Purely web-based, or are there apps or extensions for Chromebooks, etc.?
It's everywhere you want to be, Martin.
Okay.
So yeah, you can get in. There's an iPad app that's what we use with our early childhood kids. But then, you know, it runs on a Chromebook. It'll run on just a regular Windows computer or Mac.
That's cool, because then the kids can kind of, through as they go through the grade levels, they have a familiar tool, and then they have an ongoing portfolio, kind of a scrapbook of things they've done over the course of their educational careers.
Well, you only get the scrapbook if you pay for it, Martin. So
there you go.
So you just got to remember to save it year after year, and then they can accumulate that stuff.
Okay.
So cool. Let me do a quick plug while we're talking about Seesaw for our Wells Education Technology and Leadership Summit. If you want to learn more about Seesaw, we have a presentation just geared toward that. It's called Seesaw, Student-Driven Portfolios Made Easy, being led by Stephanie Cron and Kurt Gosdick, both with experience in Seesaw, and reads exactly as Jason described it. Works on an iPad, Chromebook, or computer, show their work with pictures, drawings, recording their voice, text, and files. So if you haven't experienced it yet, this is a session you want to sit in on. Get your registrations in, folks. You can see all three of us this summer at Wells EdTech Lead, and learn all kinds of great stuff like Seesaw.
You're getting really good at this kind of cross promotion, you know, nice lead in kind of stuff. We did actually not to do that on purpose. Seesaw is actually mentioned in the book, so
yeah,
this was not contrived in any way. What other kind of things or tools did they mention in the book?
A couple that I noted were Google Slides and Minecraft. I thought those were very different tools to do.
All right.
Digital creation in. Certainly Google Slides has proven to be very versatile. You can size your slides to be the size of printed paper if you want, do you know, newsletters and all kinds of things in it, as well as obviously presentations. They're embeddable. You can put all kinds of content into them, and it fits with the G Suite of tools that many educators are using today in the classroom. Then Minecraft. Jason, do you guys use Minecraft in your district?
You know, we used to use it a lot more, and then when Microsoft bought them, we've kind of gotten away from it a little bit because their licensing model changed.
Oh, really?
But we have used it, and it's super useful. You know, you can do things anywhere from, you know, just give kids total creative license, and you know, I've had kids make like mazes and puzzles that you have to solve, and I saw a YouTube video once of a guy who actually made like a microprocessor, but it was, you know, gigantic because it was in Minecraft.
Nice.
But, you know, and, you know, people create calculators and, like, you know, there's just some amazing things that you can do in Minecraft if you have a little bit of knowledge. You know, just a super, it's a
very
really
intriguing platform. Yeah. If they're not using it in your district, I'm sure they're using it at home. So
that's exactly right.
All right. Lots of other tools here. You're going to have to get the book and read it to learn about those. And then each chapter, which is kind of a neat thing about this particular book, has what they call a lesson. What do they call it? Lesson plan. Lesson plan example, and then a catechism lesson as well that talks about different aspects of this. And as we kind of talked about earlier in our conversation, a way to kind of tie these things together. One thing that kind of attracted me to the catechism lesson was just kind of the connection to using these technologies around God's Word. Obviously, God's Word is at your fingertip, but clearly there's an evaluation and creation process that can be attached to that as well.
Yep. And the lesson plan area may be worth mentioning this chapter. It's kind of a bonus. They actually have two lesson plans.
Oh, yeah.
One
right.
is very specific to exploring digital citizenship in a traditional classroom setting. They use the example of a literature class that's just read Hoot and at a sixth grade level, and comparing and contrasting the themes in Hoot to digital citizenship type themes. And then there's a traditional lesson plan also presented for teaching digital literacy as a standalone kind of lesson, and ideas around that. So really you get two lesson plans for the price of one this chapter.
Mm-hmm. And in the show notes, we're going to put some other links in here, some resources that we are aware of and have used over the course of time. Sally, you want to run through those real quick?
Sure. we have Welcome to the Web, which is probably geared toward upper elementary age students. It's a good way to teach basic skills for searching and copying and pasting and what your browser can do for you, how you can hover over links to see where they're taking you before you click them and things like that. It's kind of fun. It has a little game type scenario at the end for you to use all your skills. So a good way for students. I've recommended it actually to adults as well. It's pretty pretty easy to follow. Google has a tool called Be Internet Awesome where they teach digital literacy skills, kind of a game feel. And then, of course, we can't go without mentioning Common Sense Media, which has just a multitude of tools. A whole curriculum for grade levels K through 12. You can tap into specific grade level materials, and they have games and things that the kids can play as well, kind of integrated into the lesson plans. You do have to sign up for a free account in order to get access to the full lesson plans, but very well done. I think that's what you guys use in Bennington School District, right, Jason?
Yeah. We love the Common Sense Media resources. All of their curriculum and their lesson plans, they're all free, freely available. You can download and use however you want. And then there's tons of other stuff on there, too. They have a great site for evaluating like apps and other types of media, movies, you know, games. There's a ton of information on that website that definitely people need to go and check out if they aren't familiar already.
And as I recall, they kind of cater it to different audiences too. So they have teacher-based resources, student and parents, right?
Yep. That's exactly right.
Okay. Excellent. Good. Great discussion. So if you'd like to follow along with our conversation, there's still time. We have a bunch of chapters left. It's not a long book. Again, this is a Concordia Publishing House book, so it's written from a Lutheran perspective. Faithfully Connected, Integrating Biblical Principles in a Digital World. In fact, I believe it is the text they use to teach this kind of stuff at Martin Luther College. So it's worth, I think it comes highly recommended and worth the read. We're enjoying it so far. So read along with us. Should we move along to our news in tech segment? Some Chromebook news or Chromebook competitor news.
Yeah, this is actually from Microsoft. An article out in The Verge last week where they said Microsoft's latest Chromebook competitors are budget laptops and a stylus for school. And it looks like one is priced as low as $189, running Windows 10. There are 7 devices in total, including 2 new 2-in-1 devices from Acer and Lenovo that start at less than $300. Acer, Dell, and Lenovo are also offering more affordable 13- and 15-inch laptops in the $300 range. So trying to get a piece of that education technology pie, because there's got to be a lot of dollars being spent across the whole spectrum of schools in the United States and I would assume worldwide. So Microsoft wants to be in that game. You guys buying Microsoft computers soon in your district, Jason?
No, we are not purchasing Microsoft products in our district.
So no Minecraft. No Chromebook competitors. It sounds like Microsoft not welcome in Bennington.
Well, it's not that they're not welcome. I mean, we have a Microsoft volume license. Okay.
You're suspicious of
really,
these. I can tell.
I'm really hesitant. You know, the Chrome platform and Chromebooks have really matured over the past couple of years since they've been released.
Right?
That's kind of where I'm thinking, and I don't know. I've used some of the really cheap Windows machines before, and it's a very poor experience. So, you know, I'm skeptical, but you know, if it's the best tool for the job, then you know we'll take a look at it and evaluate. Nothing's ever off the table,
so time will tell.
Yep. You know where I find some of these low-cost laptops fall down is in the input side and usually the trackpad. They're just very substandard. And boy, if you want to go crazy in a hurry, try and work with a lousy trackpad. That is just a nightmare. So All right. Well, I have a little news in tech as well, and maybe everybody's already heard this, and maybe it's already been fixed by the time this podcast gets released. But Apple's not having a very good week because their FaceTime has a serious bug. FaceTime is their video, audio and video conferencing, but apparently there's a bug in the latest iOS release 12.1 that allows somebody to initiate a FaceTime call with somebody else. And even if that person does not accept the call, if you go through a couple of different things, you can actually have the microphone, their microphone, the person you're calling's microphone, stay open. And in some cases, their video camera stay on without them knowing it. Obviously, bugs don't get much worse than this kind of bug. So there was apparently Apple had known about this for a week, didn't do anything. Then it got a little bit more public, and everybody was making sure everybody was turning off their FaceTime, disabling it on all their devices. And then eventually Apple shut down the FaceTime server, so it's not even possible to use the service. So they said there'd be a fix later this week. Hasn't happened yet. At least I haven't checked my device yet. But, boy, this is kind of scary.
Yeah, when things go awry, I guess they go far awry. That's a bad flaw.
That's a big
bug. To have spying on
you. Yep. Yep. So hopefully that gets fixed. If you're hearing this and it hasn't been fixed, just be aware of that. It shouldn't affect you because Apple has taken the appropriate step in turning that off, but that's not a good thing. So the challenge will be now they've got to get everybody to upgrade to 12.2 when that comes out, and not everybody is real timely in upgrading their devices. Those people that maybe aren't in tune with technology and just kind of ignore that little red icon that says, hey, there's an update ready. So we'll see what happens. So bad stuff. On a lighter note and a more positive note, Wells Now.
People using technology to share the good news. Mm-hmm. Wells Now is focusing on the Grow in Grace website, which is part of the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary website. It's an initiative to support called workers' ongoing growth and provides retreats and events and courses and all kinds of things to support our called workers. And one thing we've never highlighted, we found out recently they have something called the Grow in Grace Notes Devotion. So Grace Notes kind of in the middle of that. That's pretty cool. And it's looks like a monthly devotion that comes out, and there's an archive of them online. And as I understand it, maybe a podcast version of this devotion as well.
Right.
So if this is of interest to you, then check out our show notes. We'll have a link to the Grow in Grace website and these Grace Notes devotions.
Yeah, very well done. Let's move on to our tips or picks of the week. Jason, you want to lead off here? You have a pick?
Yeah, sure. So, we're talking about creation and how to contribute content to the internet. So my pick is a website called headliner.app, headliner.app. And what this is it's a completely free online video creation tool. And if you go to the website and you check it out, it's super new, just within the last year or so. But their big thing is they do not charge anything at all for their app. If you click on the pricing link that's on there, it says it's 100% free. There's no catch. Mm-hmm. They're not selling your data. There's no watermark. And then they just, they keep on going. Mm-hmm. No, really, what's the catch? how are you going to keep going? Oh, we've got some ideas, mm-hmm. but so, it could be definitely one of those sites that's here today, gone tomorrow. But, for now, this is a great resource, for creating some of those free videos in an easy and a friendly kind of a way. So I've played with it a little bit, and it's just what they say. It's pretty simple. So I'm excited to dig into that one a little bit more and see how it can be used.
Are you able to download the content, or you upload it to cloud service or YouTube or something like that? Where does the finished product go?
Yeah, so your finished product, you can download direct from them. You can post it to social, and then, you know, if you want to post it to YouTube or something like that, that's also in there. But it's made, the intent is that you put it together and then you post it to social media. So
interesting. Cool.
Very nice. Always good to have a new video editor in your belt.
All right.
It's a good thing.
Right.
Sally's up.
And mine ties loosely into our conversation on digital literacy as well. This one is actually more about security, cybersecurity. And one of the companies that I follow in that realm is something called KnowBe4, K-N-O-W-B-E and the number 4. And they're constantly publishing great blog articles about different security issues that are out. And one that I read recently has to do with helping your children understand security concerns. They actually have free resources available now, one of which is specifically for teaching. It's got a lot of different elements to it. It has posters and things like that you could use in a classroom. It has little workbooks that you can do with different age levels and things like that. And it's their interactive cybersecurity activity kit. So that's one thing that's mentioned in this blog article we're going to link to. The other thing that's mentioned is actually an online course, and maybe it would be appropriate for older students to work through this, or even to be done at home with the parents and children working together. It's a course called, I want to say it's called their home course. In other words, they're kind of gearing it towards parents sitting down with their kids. It takes about an hour to work all the way through it. It's done in a real professional method. Their delivery method is very professional. You can kind of keep up with where you are in the course and things like that. And it covers topics including online banking security, keeping your identity safe, avoiding malware, securing your home network, and email and attachment safety. So all good things to be aware of, and preventing, you know, different types of attacks that are out there these days. So again, it's from the KnowBe4 website, and we'll have a link in our show notes to the article that links to both of those resources.
Very nice. Yeah, KnowBe4 is a mainstream security company. And I know that's the company that Martin Luther College uses for their phishing service, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, and they send out suspicious-looking emails trying to educate their faculty and staff what to open and, you know, be suspicious of different things. So it's good. It's a good.
They do a good job tool. Of it. Yeah. I actually read a little bit about the company, and they have a former hacker who went to jail for hacking as part of the leadership of this company. Mm-hmm. So,
in that case, I'm all for it because I learn from the best. Yeah. All right. My pick of the week is actually now one of my new favorite Chrome extensions called the Great Suspender. Those people who use Chrome know that sometimes it can be a little bit resource intensive. It will consume as many resources, maybe more than you want, and maybe slows things down as you open more and more tabs. So if you are a person that opens a lot of tabs, you may have experienced this. If you look in your system utilities or your memory management tool, you'll notice that every tab takes up some kind of memory and disk space. And the Great Suspender is a little extension that helps you out with that. Basically, what it does, and I'm really shocked that I didn't even know this existed. It's used by 1.5 million users, apparently, according to the Chrome Web Store, and got huge ratings. But basically, it's a lightweight extension that reduces Chrome's memory footprint. So what it does is after a certain amount of time, it will suspend inactive tabs. So if you've got a bunch of open tabs that you haven't visited in a prescribed time, I have it set for an hour. So if I haven't visited a tab in an hour, it's going to essentially suspend the tab. And what that means is it's going to remove it from memory And then when you come back to it, it reloads it. And it actually works really well. You'd think it might take a little while to do that, but it's less than a second to bring back that content. And even if you've been logged in, it kind of maintains that that cookie so that you don't have to re-log into different sites that you're on. If you're in the middle of filling out a form, it won't suspend it, for instance. So it'll say, hey, you're in the middle of filling out a form. I'm going to leave this one open. So it's actually very smart in that respect. And it really, and I haven't used it for more than a week here, so I can't gauge, and I don't usually have a lot of tabs open, but I can imagine this being a real benefit over time where you're trying to keep Chrome as lean and mean as possible. And those people with a ton of tabs, this could be a lifesaver and kind of prevent crashes and improve system performance across the board. So neat little application, neat little extension that gets great ratings and works. I've not found any flaws with it whatsoever so far, called the Great Suspender, available for Chrome on both Windows and Mac.
I love it. I love the name.
I do too.
Picture of the single suspender holding up your pants. Right. But I love Chrome getting better and better. That's a big deal.
And I'm wondering why Chrome doesn't actually build this into the browser itself as a kind of a feature. And maybe they will. But this seems to work really well. So
excellent.
Let's move on to our what we normally call ministry resource, mm-hmm. but for our education-focused show of the month, we call it a Pinterest resource.
Yep. This month, we're getting this season, actually, of Wells Tech for Education shows, we're getting in the Pinterest theme because teachers do use Pinterest a lot, and there are a lot of great education-focused resources that are pinned out there. It's kind of become a visual search engine for teachers, especially, to find resources for the classroom. And so I wasn't disappointed when I went out and searched on digital literacy. I actually started a board that we're going to link to with just a few of the many resources that I found related to digital literacy and teaching digital citizenship, all of those kind of things. And there's some really great ideas out there. I found one where people had used a regular set of Jenga blocks and colored the ends of the Jenga blocks with different colors. I'm assuming they just used magic markers to color on the wood on the end. So as you're pulling out a Jenga block, you're selecting which of the colors you want to answer a question about. So for instance, if you pull out a purple one, you have to name one thing that's considered private information that you should never share online. So again, more in the citizenship kind of thing. If you pull out a pink one, name one thing you should do if you or someone else is getting bullied, cyberbullied. A blue one, name one thing you should think about before you post something online. So I just thought that was a neat way to reinforce digital citizenship type concepts with students. Mm-hmm. Another one I really liked, somebody was teaching digital citizenship, and they had these visuals in a little Ziploc baggie, kind of your survival kit. They had a padlock in there to remind students to set strong passwords, and a toothbrush to tell students to think that passwords and toothbrushes are very similar, that you never want to share them, you know. And then one of my favorites was a little tube of toothpaste. Imagine the information you're putting online is like toothpaste coming out of a tube. Once it's out, it's almost impossible to get it back in the tube.
I would imagine. So, not that I've ever tried that, but I can imagine that'd be hard.
Yeah. Good illustrations and just a few of the things that are out on this digital literacy Pinterest board. So you want to check that out. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Very nice. Good. Nice find, Sally. Thank you. Let's move on to community feedback.
And we have a couple of things to share in that regard. First up, a message from Leslie Bergman. And Leslie, shout out to Leslie. She is at Good Shepherds in West Allis, Wisconsin, and a faithful listener. She's been with us on Wells Tech probably since we started.
Pretty close, yeah, I'm sure.
We talked a little bit about Google sunsetting Google Hangouts, switching over to Chat and Meet. It's also pulling the plug, she reminded us, on Google Plus, and we had talked about that a little bit on the show as well. Coming very soon, I think April, for Google Plus for consumers. She also followed up on our conversation about Google My Business and said it's very important to claim your church and school. This is you having ownership of your business in the search results for your church or school.
Right.
She said, when I initially investigated this, I found that someone had listed our church as permanently closed and listed one of our parsonages located on a different street as holding worship services. I'm having some challenges with our listing because our church and school childcare each has its own street and mailing address, two separate buildings separated by a parking lot. So far, she's unable to create a single listing which combines our church and school and childcare into one ministry's listing. If anyone out there has solved that issue, she'd love to know what that solution is. And then also, she commented about Microsoft, Yahoo, and Bing. Bing has a places for businesses at bingplaces.com. It's the Microsoft version of Google My Business with a similar procedure to claim your business on the Bing search engine. It also pulls automatically in Facebook reviews to add to your listing. So I was not aware of the Bing version where you can claim your business as well.
Very good. I got a message via our special ministries team from Pastor Paul Ziemer, who's involved with our national civilian chaplaincy to the military. And he had a question for us that I thought I'd throw out here. He said, one of our MCPs is working with his congregation to set up live streaming and is wondering about security issues. Should faces of people, including children, be shown? Should names be announced, say, at a baptism? If any of you work through this and have some thoughts to share, we all would be interested. Just send on to me and I'll pass them along. Interesting question. I had not thought about the live streaming, and we're going to talk more about live streaming next week. And maybe we can address this a little bit more fully then. But connecting names of children, let's say the child who is being baptized with a video, I think that might be a privacy of some concern. But I think in general, and I'd love to hear what you guys think too, I think in general you have to consider a place of worship a public place, and images, pictures, etc., may be taken and shared. And that's not to say that you wouldn't want to maybe put a disclaimer in your service folder or whatever and say, hey, we do stream this for ministry purposes. Just be aware of that. But what do you guys think? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I was faced with something similar, not with streaming, but with just scanning church bulletins. Mm-hmm. I wanted to scan all the bulletins just to have examples of bulletins of all the different churches we're able to visit. And then I realized it had people's names and phone numbers and things like that, and it's pretty integrated throughout bulletins. And so I kind of stopped that practice because I didn't want to be responsible for, sharing their personal information.
Yep, that was one response I shot back to them just off the top of my head, that I wouldn't put bulletins or newsletters online, at least in a public way, because they do contain some of that information, right? Mm-hmm. Jason, any thoughts here?
Yeah, I'm processing because it's the fact that it's a church makes it you handle it a little bit differently, and I think I would get behind your comments about, this is a public place and it's a public venue, and informing people that this is a possibility, because you always want to give people the opportunity to opt out. So, and especially if we're talking about something like a baptism or something like that, where there could be potentially, and, especially since I think Pastor Ziemer works with the mm-hmm. armed forces, mm-hmm. So there might be some issues, like some actual legitimate security issues. So, with something like that, definitely get consent. And if there are people that don't want that information shared, It would not that we have any legal responsibility, but I do think that there is a little bit of a moral.
It's a fellowship. You want to be sensitive to that, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's just off the top of my head. That's the way that I would address that.
If anybody out there has experience with this or maybe has policies around this kind of thing, let us know. We'd love to be able to share that and talk about that. And as I mentioned, we're going to talk more about live streaming next week. We have an interview with Philip Wells, who's been on the show before, talk about some of the best practices for that. So maybe that'd be hopefully get some community feedback around that as well.
Excellent. One more community feedback piece we want to mention in today's show is some new files that have been added to the Wells Tech Wiki.
Yay!
So, yeah, it's seeing new life thanks to Pastor Peter Hagen, who serves at Resurrection in Malmy, Ohio. Pastor Hagen does the Raised with Jesus podcast. We talked about that actually on last week's show, and he actually had a really great idea. We have a page on the wiki where we list non-worship podcasts, things like Raised with Jesus and Wells Tech and the Daily Devotion and the Cana Bound podcast and Gird Up and things like that. And on that page, Pastor Hagen has uploaded some short audio clips that are basically commercials for some of those other non-worship podcasts. He's got one for Raised with Jesus, his podcast, and he's got one for the Gird Up podcast, which we talked about earlier in 2018. And so if you want to create a commercial for your podcast, you certainly have a place to share it. And if you're doing a podcast, consider downloading these commercials and integrating them into your audio files. Mm-hmm. It's easy to do, right, Martin? You're the audio wizard.
It is. And we're going to do a first in 586 episodes. We are going to have a commercial, and that is the Gird Up podcast, just as an example of what we're talking about here.
I'm Jason Fry.
And I'm Charlie Ungemach.
And we are the Gird Up Podcast. To gird up means?
It's an ancient way of preparing oneself for hard work or a battle ahead. And so our work is to reclaim masculinity in the modern world, to live out our calling as men of God. So if you join us, you will find a community of believers, brothers in Christ, working hard to become the men that God created us to be.
Join us on a weekly basis on Mondays. We have our Man Talk Mondays, our Interview Tuesdays, where we interview men living out their Christian lives in a way that's admirable to us. And then our Saturday morning coffee, Manvotionals, where we get in the Word with each other, with our community of men here. You can follow us on iTunes, Spotify, and Pippa, as well as Facebook. Please leave us a comment or send us a message if there's something you're interested in us talking about. Join us.
Gird up. Man up. I like being a man.
Boy.
All right. No fees were taken as a result of us playing that little infomercial. But I think that's awesome. Very well done. I think that's a neat thing. So I'd encourage other people
Good
to
idea.
Do that. If others want to send us those little promotional audio clips, we'll certainly consider that.
Very good. I think that's going to do it for community feedback this week.
All right. Just a reminder, if you want to submit something for the show, go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, or send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. We're on all the social medias, even Google Plus for a little bit longer, but don't put it there. use Facebook, Twitter, Digo, Pinterest, those kind of places where we'll frequent and get it. And also, if you're of a mind, leave us a review on your favorite podcast application, whether that's iTunes or Stitcher or whatever. That helps us climb the rating or climb the rankings and maybe gets other people who wouldn't normally find us listening to the show and learning about Jesus. So really appreciate everybody tuning in again this week. Jason, thanks for joining us. Appreciate that.
Yeah, always super excited to be a part.
And we will talk to everybody. Sally has something.
We will talk about a video.
We have a video.
Of the week,
I skipped
Martin
right
Spriggs.
Over that. How could I do that? I was so excited about our first advertisement that that we do have a video of the week.
We do, and it ties back to our earlier discussion, just highlighting the huge video library available from Common Sense Education. In their professional development area, you'll find all kinds of videos geared toward teachers and teaching digital literacy skills and digital citizenship skills. And some of them are integrated into those lesson plans that we mentioned earlier. We'll have an example and links on that show notes site, wellstech.wells.net.
Whew, got that in.
Yeah.
I was looking at the clock thinking, boy, we better not go over an hour. So
you're just cold.
Brain and lips are not working super well today. Yeah. So, all right. Now we're going to close. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.